There's an old expression that says this: the good news is, the bad news is wrong. And there's a new book about marriage called The Good News About Marriage. The subtitle is Debunking Discouraging Myths About Marriage and Divorce. And the chief author is Shanti Feldhahn. She also co-wrote this with Tally Whitehead. But Shanti joins us to talk about this whole issue. And Shanti, congratulations. I think that this may well be the most important book on the subject of marriage in America since The Case for Marriage, which is at least 10 years old, by Linda Waite and Maggie Gallagher. So congratulations.
Oh, thanks. That really means a lot coming from you. I appreciate that.
Sure. Okay, so what is the good news about marriage?
Well, basically, it is that a lot of the discouraging things that everybody believes about marriage being in trouble are wrong. I stumbled over this a number of years ago when I was, I think you know, I used to be a columnist, a newspaper columnist, and was doing a column trying to, you know, talking about divorce, and I just wanted to cite the correct divorce rate, and we started looking into it and realized that a lot of the conventional wisdom that people think is the case about the divorce rate being 50% and so on, that the numbers we were seeing didn't match that at all, and it started this really, it was sort of an investigative research project at this point. And we started digging and and found out that a lot of our conventional wisdom about the divorce rate, happiness in marriage, the rate of divorce in the church, all this discouraging stuff that really actually kills marriages is just not true.
Okay, well, let's deal with probably the biggest one of all. One out of two marriages in America ends in divorce. You hear that all the time, even from sermons.
Yeah, well, I've said it.
Okay. And what is the reality?
Well, the reality is that those numbers that you see, anytime you see that, you know, 40 to 50% of marriages end in divorce, those are projections. And there have been many, many smart people that have tried to get a handle on what the odds are of a marriage ending, you know, far into the future. But we've never come close to hitting that number as a societal average. Right now, for example, as we're sitting here talking, according to the Census Bureau, 71% of people are still married to their first spouse.
That's impressive.
That's huge. I mean, yeah. And it's very different from what people think. And when nobody knows what the first marriage divorce rate actually is, that's actually one of the reasons I think the myths kind of get started.
Mm-hmm.
But we can get a lot closer to a number. We know that it has to be less than 29%. And by the way, I should explain that when we say 71% are still married to their first spouse, the 29% that aren't, that includes people that were married for years and their spouse died.
Mm.
And that's not just the divorce rate. That includes death. And nobody knows the breakdown. We can get closer. We know there's about a 10% rate of widowhood, so, and there's some other factors, we can estimate that maybe 20 to 25% of first marriages have ended in divorce. Now, that's still too high, but it's a whole lot better than what people think it is. The reality is most marriages last a lifetime.
Hmm. Now, that is good news. Well, now let me ask you this, though. There are a lot of people who are hesitant about even getting married in the first place. Many think that, why buy the shoes before you try them on? And so they live together. I mean, you hear these expressions, but I've also heard that statistically living together is actually not preparing for marriage well. It's actually preparing for divorce better. In other words, there's a correlation between the two.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that is accurate. One of the things that that Tally and I, who's my senior researcher, that we felt was kind of our job with this is to dig into all of the conventional wisdom, all of the myths, all of the truths, find out what is true. And that one is true. If you live together, it is more likely that if you end up getting married, that marriage is statistically a bit more likely to end in divorce. And I think it's because there's a researcher named Scott Stanley who's done a lot of work on this, and the way he calls it is he says it's because you're sliding into marriage instead of deciding on marriage. And there's kind of just, it's easier, you're living together, might as well take the step to get married, as opposed to the step of I'm choosing you, making a commitment for the rest of my life. And so those people who live together are more likely than to end up getting divorced. Now, that doesn't mean that if you lived together ahead of time, it's a death sentence,
right,
obviously.
Right.
We have some great friends from our church who lived together before they were married, before they were churchgoers, before faith was an important part of their lives. And when they heard that they were that statistically more likely to get divorced, they got this alarmed look on their face. I'm like, calm down. You've been married for 20 years. You've got three kids. You're fine. But it is statistically a bit more likely. But I ask, and I'll ask you this.
Yes.
Why is it that people are more likely to live together? Is it because they've lost hope for marriage? Because they've believed all the bad stuff and they're kind of cynical and they think, why bother getting married if we're just going to get divorced? And that, to me, is one of the big things for us to talk about is if we can change how people think about marriage and realize all the good news is out there, we could change, really, some societal customs as well.
Yeah. Going back to living together, I think part of the reason, obviously, that, well, maybe it's not obvious, part of the reason that people do get divorced after living together, there's no mystery left. For example, before I got married and before my wife and I, got married together, we did not engage in sex. Not that that was easy to do, to follow God's ways, but we did it. And looking back, we're so grateful that we didn't, have premarital sex or whatever. And I think there's definitely a correlation, even if you don't live together. But if you are fooling around before you get married, then what's to keep you faithful once you are married? Whereas if you basically you're just faithful to each other. In fact, I've even heard one statistician say that supposedly only 2% of virgins who marry each other end up getting divorced. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and that would be an interesting. I gotta look that study up.
I'll give you a source on that one. There's a Christian sex educator. And she goes around talking about that. Pam Stenzel, Stenzel, Pam Stenzel. And I think that's phenomenal. But it makes sense that there is a higher correlation between people saving the good things for marriage and waiting, and then when you do get married, then, things are not, it's not all downhill from there, if that makes sense. It's like saving your Christmas presents for Christmas morning, instead of unwrapping them all, in December.
One of the things that that a lot of people talk about, you talked about people saying, you need to try on the shoes before you buy them. Another category
cliche,
that people you use as a justification for let's live together is the analogy of, you want to drive the car before you. You test drive,
right.
Drive the car before you buy it. And the analogy is, according to all the research that's been done on this, the act of trying out the shoes or the act of test driving the car actually in some way is more likely to break the car. And that's what all of the research has found. And so it is interesting. Let's go back.
Well, wait, when you say that, you're not being literal about cars and shoes. You're talking about sex.
I'm talking about like living
right.
together before marriage.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's interesting. God says to save sex for marriage for a reason.
Yes.
Because he knows that this is how we're made and how we're wired.
Yeah. His rules are for our good.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's interesting. One of my other research projects, I've done all this research with men and women and teenagers and, getting into the underneath the surface stuff that people think and feel
sure.
but don't often say. And just, I know it's a bit of a tangent, but one of the things your listeners might be interested in is that we were doing all this research with young men asking about, if they did have sex with their girlfriend. And they talked about the fact that they were probably the ones trying to talk the girlfriend into it. But the people who did, the guys who did, said that they started, as soon as they crossed that line, they started to doubt whether they could trust her.
Oh.
And it's an emotional thing that
yeah.
God has created. And it really does make a difference to save that for the bonds of marriage where you can trust each other.
Yep. Well, and, since we're on the subject of sex, just real briefly, the most comprehensive study on the subject of sex – still to this date was released in the early 1990s under the auspices of the University of Chicago by four co-authors, and they released it in a book form called Sex in America, and there was a Time magazine cover and so forth. But one of the things that they said there, and they were surprised at the findings, but they said that people who were committed Christians, religious people and so forth, had the highest levels of sexual satisfaction. Obviously, that's in the context of marriage. It, again, flies in the face of the stereotypes, but it makes sense. You know, God's rules are for our good. He's not an ogre trying to withhold something. Instead, He's a loving father who cares about what's best for us and doesn't want these things to be debased.
Yeah. And you know what? That leads to another thing that to me is so important for your audience, especially to know, for people who are more likely to be followers of Christ and people who are more likely to be trying to do things the way God says, not that we do it perfectly, but is to encourage your listeners that when it comes to, for example, you know, let's talk about marriage again for a minute. Everybody who is a churchgoer, in addition to all the stuff that we've been just been talking about, physical intimacy before marriage and trying to avoid that, one of the other things that God says is to not give up meeting together and to make sure that you make church attendance a part of your life.
Right.
And that that's important to be part of that community. And we have heard for years that, unfortunately, actually going to church doesn't make any difference for your marriage, and that the rate of divorce is the same inside the church as outside the church.
You hear that a lot.
That is, it's so discouraging.
And it's so false. It's so false. In fact, let me quote you.
It's not true.
Let me quote you from your own book, page 131. Every study that has been done has found that those who act on their faith by attending worship services, praying with their spouse, and so on, are happier and closer in their marriage and or have a significantly lower divorce rate. Your comment.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the problem. And this is what one of the most important myths I think it is to debunk, especially for the body of Christ. Everybody thinks George Barna found that the rate of divorce is lower in the is the same in the church, right? Everybody thinks that's what the Barna study found. The problem is it's a giant misunderstanding. Barna never studied people in the church. That isn't even what he was trying to do. He was studying belief systems. So someone who said they were a Christian or a Muslim or a Buddhist had the same divorce rate, but he specifically excluded whether they went to church from the analysis. That wasn't what he was trying to study. So what I did is I partnered with the Barna Group, and I bought their data, and we reran all those numbers, but just with the one factor added of, was the person in church last week? And if they were, the divorce rate dropped by 27%.
Oh, man.
And by the way, that's actually the smallest drop that's been found. All of the studies, and there are many, I outline in the book, there's about five or six of them, that all these studies have found that if someone goes to church regularly, you know, in other words, if it's not just a belief, but they do something about it,
right,
you know, if they go to church regularly, the divorce rate drops anywhere from 25 to 50%, or even in some studies, a bit more than that. And that is huge.
Yeah.
Because right now, pastors, I speak at so many churches every year, and pastors are discouraged because they stand on stage, they look out on the congregation, and it's like they're thinking to themselves, if the rate of divorce here is the same as it is out there,
then what's
all my
the point?
Work doesn't mean very much.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're so right. We're talking right now with Shanti Feldhahn, and she has written this book called The Good News About Marriage. Go ahead and give the commercial in terms of a website or whatever for more information or where people can order the book, The Good News About Marriage.
Yeah, actually, the website specifically for this book is goodnewsmarriage.com.
Okay.
And I really, not a commercial, but I really, really hope that everybody listening to this will go on Amazon or ChristianBook.com or go to your Christian bookstore and buy this and hand it to your pastor. And because this is honestly, it is critical to encourage the shepherds of the body of Christ who are so discouraged.
Yeah.
And to learn this stuff for yourself so the next time that someone, you know, kind of cynically says, well, why should I go to church? You know, rate of divorce is the same. Or, you know, well, I should just give up on my marriage because, you know, half of all people couldn't make it anyway. For you to be able to say, actually, that's a myth. Yeah. That's not true.
And I'll bet you because of that myth of the one out of two marriages supposedly ending in divorce, there are some people who are afraid to enter marriage because they want to make sure, you know, it's 100% the right person. But I've heard Dr. James Dobson himself say on occasion that, you know, any of us could be married well with, you know, a few other people. I mean, in other words, that doesn't mean like there's only one person in the whole world that you are to be married to. Now, of course, once you get married, that's it. You're
that's your person.
Right. Yeah. Forsaking all others and so forth. But this idea, you know, will I find Mr. Right or where is Mrs. Right? She's out there somewhere. You know, it's that's mythical, too, I think.
Well, it's to me, it's far more important for you to concentrate on being Mr. Right.
Right.
You know, and for me to concentrate on being Mrs. Right. And that is the way that God has designed it. That is what creates the marriage that we all want. But, you know, the problem is that people need to know that that kind of a marriage is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, most people have this incorrect idea that most marriages, you know, are just not all that happy, and it's not this very abundant thing, and half of all marriages end in divorce anyway, and it's all very discouraging,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yep, you're right.
And you know, one of the things, this is, to me, this is really the linchpin of why all this matters. Why are we sitting here talking about these statistics, right? Is because, you know, as I was doing this research with men and women over the last, you know, number of years, one of the things that I've identified is that there is really, there's one common denominator underneath whether a marriage survives or fails. There's a lot of factors, obviously, that lead to marriage problems. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of different factors. But underneath which outcome happens, it's really just one factor.
Discouragement.
Does the couple have a sense of hope or a sense of futility?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they think, you know, yeah, this is difficult, but we're going to make it, it's a completely different deal.
Right.
Then once they start thinking,
that's
true, never going to change.
That's
true. We're not going to make it. And the problem is that feeling of futility itself kills marriages. And we have a culture-wide feeling of futility.
Yeah.
Because everybody believes this stuff that it turns out just isn't accurate.
Yeah.
And we need to have hope instead. And for people to be able to know, yeah, you know what? This is difficult right now. We're having a hard time. But you know what? We can get through this because most people do.
Right. And you know, I remember reading about some research where they showed that some people who, couples who went through a difficult period in their marriage but stuck it out, 5 years later were so much happier than those couples that also 5 years earlier had struggled and decided to go the divorce route. And so, therefore, the people who chose an easy divorce over those who work things through were so much happier, those that were still married, as opposed to those that had gotten divorced. And by the way, I know that there are some circumstances where, you know, let's say there's physical abuse involved or, you know, there's even life-threatening situations. And obviously, nobody would recommend somebody staying in a marriage like that if they can't really get help and change.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, and that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
You know, but what we're talking about is just the average marriage that's just miserable.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's a lot of just miserable people. It's just a far fewer number than we thought, but there's still many people, many marriages that are struggling and that are wrestling. And I guarantee you there are people who are listening to this that have been listening to me talk about, you know, the fact that most marriages are strong and happy for a lifetime. And they're like, well, but that's not me. You know, my marriage isn't very happy right now. And the truth is, this is one of the studies we confirmed, by the way, because I had heard what you just said, you know, before. I had heard that if you stuck it out for 5 years, you know, marriages were much more likely to be happy later. And I was so worried that that would prove to be another myth. But it turns out that's completely true. It was a great study that was done by Linda Waite, another one of the researchers you mentioned earlier. And this study, she tracked people who were miserable in their marriages.
Right.
And what she found is that those people who were the most miserable in their marriages, if they stuck it out for 5 years,
yes,
that almost 80% of them were very happy in their marriage 5 years later.
And you know, there's just a couple of common sense and also scriptural advice, scripture first. You know, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Love your spouse. You know, that is, I mean, that's so obvious. But also, I would say as far as the tongue, because our communication is so important. I think somebody once said that every time you build up somebody, even if it's, you know, whether it's your spouse or just somebody in general in a relationship, it's like making a deposit in a bank. And every time you criticize, even if it's just constructive criticism, it's like making withdrawal. So make sure if you are going to, you know, have some sort of constructive feedback or something like that, that you're not overdrawing, you're not bouncing checks all over the place. And some people, you know, all their communication is just so negative, especially with their spouse. It's like, wow, they wouldn't treat their dog that way.
I know. Actually, it's interesting you mention that, because one of the main research projects that I've done recently, you know, because I think, you know, I'm a researcher myself and I do all these.
And you went to Harvard. Good for you.
Yeah. Well, believe it, I didn't know at the time how God would be using that analytical background. You know, I worked on Wall Street, and then God completely gave me a right-hand turn, and I've been using that same analytical background to dig into these things that matter in relationships.
Mm, cool.
And the most recent book that I wrote that was my own research study, it's called The Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages, and it's basically this giant study of all these couples that really are very happily married, and what's the secret sauce, and what are these people doing differently? And one of the things that we identified that makes this huge difference is exactly what you just said, is they tend to speak kindly to one another. They would never say something to their spouse that they wouldn't say to a close friend, for example. And that is so critical for us to realize. And that, by the way, let's tie it back to the book we were just talking about, The Good News About Marriage.
Sure.
About the fact that there's so much more hope for marriage and so much more good stuff happening in marriage than we believe. One of the things that we were just talking about, that people who are miserable in their marriage, if they stick it out for 5 years, they're really happy 5 years later. The reason for that is another thing that people need to know that debunks one of the big myths of our time about marriage, which is that marriage is complicated. Everybody thinks marriage is so complicated, and when you start having trouble, it's going to be 3 years of psychotherapy, right? And maybe I won't even get to it then, and it's kind of rocket science to fix it. And it turns out that's not true either.
Right.
It's that most of the time, there are some problems that are complicated. There are addictions every now and then. There are those things, and they take a little extra work. But most of the time, you've got a husband and a wife who really care about each other, and they've just gotten off track. They're trying hard in the wrong areas, or they're hurting each other, and they don't realize it, and they've gotten into bad habits, like speaking really critically to each other and unkindly, and sometimes just a few changes in how they communicate can completely change the tone of the marriage, and suddenly it makes total sense.
Sure.
That they could be very happy 5 years later.
And by the way, when we keep talking about this 5 year later type thing, it's not as if there's 5 years of drudgery and then at the end of 5 years you turn a corner. It's more like usually these things can be worked out, and there's sort of a breakthrough, and then 5 years later it turns out statistically you're better off having worked through it. And forgive and forget. Biblical principles like that. Don't allow a root of bitterness in your heart. Biblical principles like that make all the difference in the world. When people repeat a matter, in other words, that is one of the worst things you can do, is to keep bringing up the same bad thing and throwing it in your spouse's face.
Yeah, and it's easy to do that when you are hurt. I mean, it truly is. It's very easy to get stuck into that rut. And I'm sure there are people who are listening right now that are recognizing that they are stuck in that rut, but they're just hurt, you know, and they don't know how to get out of it. And so that's one of the things, honestly, I really want to encourage the people realizing, is there maybe are a couple little eye-opening things that you just didn't know about your spouse and a couple little things that you could do differently. Yeah. For example, one of the things that I found also in the other book that I was just talking about highly happy marriages and kind of some of these things that they just tend to do differently that made them so much happier, is that when they're hurt, which everybody gets hurt, right? When they get hurt by their spouse, is to try to force yourself to not believe the worst of your spouse's intentions.
You know,
it's really easy to do it, but yeah. Most people care about their spouse. Your spouse cares about you and usually doesn't intend to hurt you.
Yeah, that's true. You know, when you say these things, I keep thinking about 1 Corinthians 13, and they read it obviously so often in weddings and so forth. But those aren't just words. I mean, they mean a lot. And, you know, love doesn't keep grudges. Love cares, you know, about the other person. Love puts them first. Love is not rude. I think if we work toward putting the same amount of energy towards saving a marriage, even if it's difficult, as some people put into dissolving the marriage, that would be, you know, it would be a very different scenario. We only have a few minutes left. There's one thing that you brought out in the book that I was not aware of. You say in the book that most remarriages survive just fine. How about a comment on that?
Yeah, right now there's a lot of people listening to you who are on their second marriage. And they have heard something very, very damaging, and it turns out very, very false, which is that 60% of second marriages end in divorce. That is the standard number that everybody hears for second marriages. And it turns out it's completely not true. Tally and I, when we were writing this book and researching it, we wanted to find the study that said that, you know, that had found that number because, you know, it could be the methodology was done wrong or whatever. And so we went looking, and it turns out that all the references to that number trace back to three sources that don't exist.
What?
It looks to us like a pure urban legend. And the real numbers that we do see are very different. For example, we talked about earlier that 71% of people are still married to their first spouse, right? And the 29% that aren't is split between death and divorce.
Right.
Well, on second marriages, 65% of people are still married to their second spouse.
Okay, it's smaller, obviously, than the first statistic, but it's not anywhere near the other, you know, statistic.
No, nowhere close. And the 35% that aren't still married to their second spouse, a much bigger percentage of that than in first marriages has to be death,
yeah,
rather than divorce, because you're getting married at older ages. And so maybe the divorce rate is a little bit higher, but just a little bit
higher.
I have a girlfriend who's on her second marriage, and when she learned this, she said it changed everything, because until then she felt like statistically they probably weren't going to make it, so she had to protect herself.
Oh.
She had to build a wall around her heart.
Oh,
and
which makes everything worse.
The problem.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's good. So as I said at the very outset, the good news is the bad news is wrong. And this book puts the record straight. The good news about marriage, Shanti Feldhahn. Again, the subtitle is Debunking Discouraging Myths About Marriage and Divorce. The old saying, such as the family that prays together stays together, that still holds true. And surprisingly, many marriages, in fact, even most marriages, are actually happy. We have about 30 seconds left for a concluding thought, Shanti. Go ahead, please.
Listen, I just think the most important thing is for people to recognize that there is so much more hope than people believed, and that we need to change the paradigm of how we think and talk about marriage and divorce. I hope that everybody listening to this will go give this book to their pastor. And I hope everybody will learn this stuff for themselves so they can be part of sharing this hope rather than adding to the discouraging myths that are part of the reason marriages are failing.
So don't ever say one out of two marriages in America ends
exactly.
in divorce, because it's just not true.
Not true.
GoodNewsMarriage.com for more information. Again, Shanti Feldhahn has been our guest, the author of The Good News About Marriage. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Shanti, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Sure. God bless. All right. Bye-bye.